For 12 years, Peter Freestone was a personal assistant and close friend to Freddie Mercury, the singer who reached superstardom with the rock group Queen. He was also with the singer during his final days in 1991. Since the start of the noughties, Freestone has lived in the Czech Republic, and I contacted him this week after it was confirmed that Queen will release three tracks that Time Forgot, which Mercury recorded with Michael Jackson back in 1983. Before we get to that, though, I began first by asking Peter about his former job.
Really, basically, it was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My job was just to be there for Freddie, just to take care of him, really.
Was it enjoyable work to be so close to someone who publicly was such a huge star?
Well, the thing is, I think the easiest way to say it is, yes, it was work. I know this because money would go into the bank every month. But really, it was just living Freddie's life. You know, it was absolutely amazing. I had the easy part. I was spending the money that he was having to earn. You know, I was the one who went to the auction rooms. I was the one who went shopping. So it was the easy part of the job.
I read from interviews that you've given in the past that Freddie Mercury, I guess like many stars, was a very different person, say, behind closed doors, that he was someone who valued his privacy. Is that true?
Yes, very much. Even when he invited friends over to Garden Lodge, to home, just, you know, people he knew, he would still put on the entertainer costume, if you like. He could just be himself, really, when there was just maybe four or five of the closest people he knew who were in Garden Lodge with him at the time, and he could just be himself. As soon as he went outside the door of Garden Lodge, he became public property. He realized that. And so became what the public expected. He would have on, you know, T-shirt, leather jacket, jeans, trainers, sunglasses. He would become what was expected of him.
Now, the Times and Rolling Stone both caught a lot of fans' attention this week with articles confirming that three lost songs, which Freddie recorded 30 years ago with Michael Jackson, will be released later this year. One version of one of the songs is already well known, but another called Victory is not, and if my understanding is correct, it has not been heard yet. Did you ever wonder to yourself, because you were there at the time, if those duets would come out?
Well, because they were Michael's property, they were recorded at his house, his studio, I didn't think they would ever see the light of day. To be honest, I'm very, very happy that they will. As you say, two tracks have had various treatment by fans over the years, the State of Shock and There Must Be More to Life Than This, both of which have been released in different forms already, one on the Jackson's album and one on Queen album. The third one, Victory, is something that has never been heard before. I've still got some memories of it because I was there in the studio when they were doing it. And in fact, on the original tape, whether it'll still exist when the thing is released, I actually play what you hear as the bass drum on the original Victory track. Except it wasn't a drum at all, it was a toilet door. I had to stand there for 5 minutes banging a toilet door. So, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be something for people to, you know, to really, it'll be very interesting for people.
That's brilliant. I'd heard about the bass drum, but I hadn't heard about the rest of the story, so that sounds fantastic. I hope they leave that in.
So do I.
As you mentioned, two of the songs already have a history with the fans. Do you think that the release of the third song, that this will cause something of a sensation when it does come out?
I hope so. I hope so. As I say, it's something that has never been heard before. Even the two songs that the fans have heard are going to be have a different treatment in that Queen are involved in the production. So I'm sure they will be paying attention to Freddie's voice, to the production of the whole tracks. You know, they're perfectionists. Everything has to be just right. So I believe it's definitely going to be worth the wait.
Could you take us back a little bit to the initial collaboration between Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson? Where did the interest come from? Was it from Jackson's side?
The first that I heard about it was that Michael had come to see a Queen show in Los Angeles at the Forum. And he was talking with the whole band. I remember him sitting in a corner talking with Freddie and with John. After, Freddie said, Michael says we should be doing something together because he loves what he's heard, because he'd been listening to Another One Bites the Dust and he just loved that, the whole feel of that. And so Freddie said, he wants to meet up and he wants me to record with him. It'll never happen. It's just talk. But then later, as in months later, there was another phone call from Michael because he heard Freddie was in L.A., and asking, please, will you come over and we'll see what we can do.
My understanding is that the initial meeting at Michael Jackson's ranch, however, was less than optimal. Is that correct?
I think I know what story you're referring to. Michael had a sort of mini zoo in Encino. And his sort of favorite pet at that time were llamas. And being summer in Los Angeles, Freddie was wearing white T-shirt, white jeans, white trainers. And after the tour of the mini zoo, Freddie was wearing white T-shirt, white jeans with the bottom sort of mud spattered, and brown trainers, as we've been traipsing through the mud. It was different. Also, Michael took us on a tour of the house, and we were in his bedroom, and it was so funny. He also had this big snake at the time, and the snake was in the bedroom, and it was in this very large terrarium. But while Michael publicly said what a great friend, and it was the best, it was an amazing snake, and it was really good, what we did notice was that the roof of the terrarium held on with about 40 bricks to make sure that the snake could not get out.
That's cute.
it's amazing what can be said and then the little different facts behind it.
The actual recordings, when were those done? Were they done on that same day or was it another meeting?
No, it was just the one day. Because both of them were very busy at this time, it was, I think, in 1983. Recording, touring, all of that sort of stuff. And Michael wanted Freddie to finish State of Shock because Michael wanted that track on the new Jackson's album called Victory. Freddie wasn't able to go and finish it. So Michael said, look, Mick Jagger would be able to do it. Do you have a problem if Mick does it? And Freddie says, no, of course not. You need it finished. It's your music. It's your track. Go ahead, do what you need to do. And basically, because of timing, they were never able to get back and finish anything.
How does the quality of the vocals strike you in terms of the way the singers complement each other? Freddie was such a powerhouse singer.
I think because they are so different that it works so well. If both of them had the powerful voices, it would seem almost like a competition. But you use the right word with compliment, and the two voices do work together very well. It's like a conversation.
You were with Freddie up until his untimely death in 1991. I wanted to ask you how your life changed after that. Eventually you ended up here in the Czech Republic, and you've been here for what, 10 years now?
12 years now. Yeah, life did change very much. And that, if you think that Freddie's been gone now 20 years, and I'm still talking about him, physically, Freddie wasn't around anymore, isn't around anymore. But the image, the voice, the personality of Freddie is still around, and there is still a huge interest in him. He was a unique person. He was an amazing person. and he wrote some great music. So if, as I say, if the new generation out now is interested in it, then I will do what I can for them. I mean, I'm still involved in music here in the Czech Republic. I am involved in a thing called Rock Camp, which is for children, but they aren't children, between the age of 11 and 17, for 2 weeks every summer. We get together and they make music, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm also working with a young Czech musician who has a band, Milan Chris, who has actually persuaded me for the first time in my life to believe I can write lyrics. So I'm actually writing lyrics for songs that they're creating the music for. Everything I do now is still because of Freddie Mercury.
Queen today still has legions of fans all over the world. I've read that there are radio stations, for example, that won't play performers that are, I don't know, older than, have been around for more than 30 years, that kind of thing. How do the fans strike you here in the Czech Republic, as well as the radio stations, because Queen really does have a special place in a lot of Czech fans' hearts?
One of the reasons that I've actually settled here in the Czech Republic is because of people's attitude to music. In Britain, it's very narrow-minded. People, particularly young people, will only listen to what they're told to listen to, basically, written and performed by people under the age of 30. They have MTV and they are glued to that, and that's what they believe is the music. Here, I've met a few times, I know Karel Gott, who is listened to by people from the age of 9 to 90. In England, that doesn't happen. It will not happen. Here, in schools, the children are taught about Janáček, Dvořák, Smetana. Again, that doesn't happen in Britain. People here are prepared to open their minds to music. I think the reason that Queen is so established, so well-liked, is because their music actually is timeless. If you think that they started recording music 40 years ago, yet you listen to it, it's still as fresh today as it was then.